Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, all, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here you've got Jonna Spilbor, you've got Carol Pesci, and my apologies, you've also got Frankenberry, but that is the cross that you bear when listening to this show. But two-thirds of it is okay for you, so stop complaining. But anyway, hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, we love you, Frank and Barry.
Hey, yes. Thanks. It's nice to have a couple. I'll note that to my sister.
And it's been a minute. We had a couple weeks off.
Yes, we did have a couple of weeks where we ran some repeats, but we are back.
And we are back.
So people get to hear new stuff.
All fresh.
That's right, man.
Ish. Yes.
Yes. And like we've done laundry.
Yes.
And we're folding freshly dried clothes. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And that is us. But to be fair, we are, because we've been so busy, and you know, we'll just catch everybody up, I think, for the first part of this show. We are going to be running an encore performance of a guest that we spoke to a little while back and loved. His name is Nate Green, and he's a leadership and entrepreneur performance coach. He's also an award-winning entrepreneur and a best-selling author. His book, the book that we spoke to him about, is called Suck Less, Do Better. And you know why we want to listen to him, you guys? We want to listen to him because he started a business and then sold it, not for six figures, not for seven figures, but for eight figures. Okay, so he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
That's Nate Green, and we're gonna run our amazing interview with him in our next segment.
Okay, great. And plus, we also wanted to, revisit the guy just because his book is called, Suck Less, Do Better.
Yeah.
But we did have years ago Kate Northrup on the phone and an interview, and her book is called Do Less. And she was advocating for dialing it back. And
Oh, that's right. I remember that, actually.
Yeah.
Because that was right in my wheelhouse.
Right? It's in all of our wheelhouses. Yeah. And I can tell you that while we were away, I know two of the three of us, were actually doing a lot more. We had a couple of great adventures, great girl adventures in the couple of weeks that we've been gone. Didn't we, Curly?
We did. And man, am I lucky to have great friends. So the first big adventure was Jeannie Kelly, who is our good friend, we mentioned her all the time on the show. And Jonna and I got in a car and drove to North Carolina to see my mom, Mama Chewy.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure many people remember Mama Chewy. She was a regular part of this show. And everybody knows Jeannie Kelly because she's also a credit guru. And we've had her on numerous times.
So 11-hour drive, which incidentally we made back in 10 hours and 15 minutes on the way back.
But, who was driving? Who was driving?
Guess who was driving? And then at some point, so I was the co-pilot, and I would be like, why is this van in the left lane hitting the brakes? And they'd be like, oh, cop, okay. But how grateful I am, and I know I told my girls this, but to give your time is the most, your time is the most valuable thing. To give that up for the people you care about says so much. So to take a whole weekend to go do that, plus the fact, and I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before, Jeannie Kelly has a borderline phobia of being driven in a car by someone else.
Ooh, it ain't borderline no more. No, it might have been borderline a few years back when it originally came up. It ain't borderline. It's full blown phobia. And so here's what I'll tell you, but you know what? She won't mind. She'll be listening.
We love her, and she knows that. Yeah.
As long as you tell the story while she's driving.
We took a couple of trips in the last few weeks, and the first one was a big trip to North Carolina. And I think, Carol, you had done the trip before.
Many times, yeah.
Yeah. Jeannie and I had never done that trip, and I truly underestimated how long 10, 11 hours is in the car. Like, I'm like, oh, it's going to go by like that. But it actually is, it's a long trip to do in one fell swoop, you know? Yeah. It really is. But fortunately, when we made that round trip in a whirlwind time, like we went down on Friday, we were back in time for the Super Bowl on Sunday. Jeannie was in the back and Carol was riding shotgun.
So she wouldn't have to look out the window.
Right. She wouldn't have to.
She had her laptop and
she was working. She was kind of quiet back there. And that was a good thing for a couple of reasons. Number one is Carol was more familiar with Jeannie's quote borderline phobia than I was. So at some point in the middle of our trip down to North Carolina, we drive into basically a blizzard, right?
Virginia.
But now this is how sneaky Carol was. So like before we get to the blizzard, she surreptitiously passes me a note, basically like, look at your phone. Where she writes,
we stopped for bathroom break. You were not looking at your phone when we were driving.
Yeah. So,
and I tried to get your attention. It didn't work. So I texted you from the stall.
Like there's a blizzard in Virginia, right? So now I calmly say, okay. And I'm trying to figure out how we can cover the windows in the back seat so Jeannie doesn't know that it's snowing, which was not possible, but it was good and it was fine. And we drove through it. It wasn't terrible. And we made it through. It slowed us down a little bit, but we got through that. Now.
Yeah, I'm also, by the way, with this whole, fear that she's got, that Carol did not hand you the phone.
What do you mean?
If Carol had handed you the phone with the note and told you to look at your phone while Jeannie's in the back seat, she would have gone through the roof.
That's why we didn't tell Jeannie. We kept it a secret until we were in the blizzard.
I'm just checking, making sure.
The only thing Jeannie said was, you know, she kept herself busy in the back. That was good. And when we're midway through this snowstorm, which lasted for a while.
It did.
She goes from the back, how does the road feel? How does the road, is it slippery? Is it? No, Jeannie, this is great. This is no problem whatsoever. Meanwhile, I'm at 10 and 2, white knuckles, right? Big trucks going by. I was like, we got this. Don't you worry.
I'm driving on a frozen pond. Everything's fine.
Pass me another Twizzler.
And a hockey stick. Come on.
Her husband, Vito, is amazing. And we basically had a gourmet charcuterie basket in the back. Like if you wanted peanuts, if you wanted cold cut roll-ups, if you wanted cheese and crackers, if you wanted Twizzlers,
we had them.
Jeannie, what do you got? She'd be handing stuff forward. We had lots of snacks.
We had them. It was great. We made a couple of Starbucks run. We did this as good and as efficiently as we could have, despite the weather, despite all of that.
It's too bad that Jeannie didn't think about, or you all didn't think about, dressing Jeannie up as like a 1950s American Airlines stewardess, you know, in first class.
That's because that's what she was. She was in charge of
peanuts.
Yes. She was in charge of those snacks. And we made it there. And, you know, and North Carolina had gotten some weather, but it was so some of those roads were a little weird. But it was really
You can
nice.
Say sketchy. You can say sketchy.
All right. They were sketchy and icy and sketchy. But we did it. And it was so good to see Mama Chewy. So,
yep.
Oh, I'm sure.
That was her birthday. We were there on her birthday weekend.
Oh, Frankenberry. And this is something I don't think you know about yet. I need to send you a picture. So we're on the way down, and my mother has a favorite cake. Every time I say the name of this cake, people are like, what? She loves a tomato soup cake. There's a can of tomato soup in it. It's more like a spice cake. It's got raisins in it. You make cream cheese. It's really delicious.
Yep.
So I had decided in advance that our good friend, who doesn't even enter the kitchen except for coffee, was going to be the one to bake the cake from scratch.
Oh, wow. So that's exciting.
I brought an apron. I brought a chef's hat. I had my sister get all the ingredients. And I broke the news to Jonna partway down our trip. Oh, by the way, Mama Chewy has a favorite cake, tomato soup cake, and I would like for you to bake it for her.
Oh, wow. Very nice.
Frankenberry.
Yeah.
She goes silent for a couple seconds. And I'm like, okay. She goes, you know something? I could stand in front of a judge and argue a case. I could do this. I could do that. I could run a law firm. That just made me nervous.
It did.
But she
did. Oh, I'm sure it did.
She did, and she crushed it. It was delicious, and I've got pictures to send you, Frankenberry, of Jonna at a mixer with a chef hat and apron on to send you.
Yep.
Oh, fantastic.
I did it for Mama Chewy. Now, it was easy because Carol had laid out all of the ingredients.
Oh, no, my sister. Yeah, Karen.
Karen did, and all of the things that you need to put the ingredients into the bowl. So, like, it was foolproof. And even for this fool, I proofed it. So it was easy, easier than it should have been. But so I did that. I baked. I'll never do it again. Well, on her next birthday.
Yeah.
I promise to do that.
Well, so I for one, commend you there, Jonna Spilbore, for the one time that I baked, that I was successful in such. Good for you to be successful in first attempt.
Wait a minute.
What are you saying, Frankenberry?
When did you bake?
I told you that story years ago where we had an apple pie contest.
Curly, do you remember that story?
I don't know.
At a radio station. Yeah, they followed. We used to have like chili contests all the time. And at another radio station that I worked at, there was a particular fellow won every year. And then we found out later on that he won, and he freely admitted, and he joyfully admitted the fact that he got the culinary to do it for him. But then we followed that. It was like, well, let's keep this up. This is fun. This is a fun group activity. So we had an apple pie contest, and I won the apple pie contest. That's because I baked an apple crumb cheesecake.
Wait a minute.
I made it up myself, the whole idea.
And was it good, or did you fail?
Oh, it was very good.
Oh, I thought you were insinuating you failed.
Okay. Oh, no, I won the contest.
But A, that's not an apple pie.
It is. Now, that was the argument that the guy who used to cheat by using the culinary tried to use. And the whole group was like, no. Sorry, ain't going to work. It was an apple pie just with a base of cheesecake underneath. That's all.
Oh, yum.
Was it a no-bake cheesecake or?
No, I cooked the cheesecake first. I did the apple pie second. I put it on top. No, it was a process. It was architecture.
Listen to her asking questions like a pro baker.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, all of a sudden Spielberg's like, hey, look, I'm a veteran now. What are we talking about here, buddy?
I kind of am. So you're telling us that you had previously told us a story where you made a cheesecake, plopped an apple pie on top of it, and won an apple pie contest because of that.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes, I had a cheesecake. The idea was to have a cheesecake base and then an apple crumb pie on top, which is what I did. I used three different types of apples. I baked the apple pie. I did the whole apple pie thing. You know, the whole kit and caboodle turned out to a very nice apple crumb pie cheesecake.
Are there any photos of this?
I actually wrote an entire blog post, which I will gladly send to both of you.
I think you need to do that.
It explains the whole thing. It explains me not burning down the house, which is actually an ongoing refrain in the post I wrote. And it's actually one of my favorite posts of all time. So I will send it to the both of you.
And maybe you should repost it on your Facebook page or your Frankenberry's Attic. Like, maybe other people need to be reminded of it.
I may have already, but I will do so. I would just have to preface it with this story as to why I'm reposting it.
Right. Of course.
Frankenberry, you know what else happened when we were down there?
What?
Trying to remember what else went on. So we're getting ready to leave.
Yeah.
And we all kiss and hug my mom and get pictures of us doing so. And we leave her. She has her own little mini apartment-ish in my sister's house. And we go walking down the hall. And her helper, Amy, who we love so much, comes out. Jonna, wait. Wait, Jonna. Mom said you promised to tell her how many cats you have. She was almost out of the house. So Jonna had to turn around, go back down. And my mother doesn't, her memory is better than all of ours combined.
Oh my God. Crazy.
So, and Jonna had promised that she would tell her. So Jonna goes down and tells her and comes back to us. I said, can I tell you something? That woman, till the day she dies, will never tell me what you told her, even though I'm her daughter. Mm-hmm. So Mama Chewy now knows. So now.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah.
She's the only other one. Just me and her. I'm not going to tell you how many, but I will tell you what she said when okay. So now I'm looking her little precious face. I'm looking her in the eye, right? Cause I promised I would tell her, and I take a deep breath and I spit out the number, and she goes, oh my.
Yes, I imagine she did.
And I turned on my heels and left.
Then we had a second adventure. Are we done with the first adventure?
Yes, we're done with the first adventure.
So the second adventure since we've been on air is as a belated birthday present to me. My husband treated what I thought was me and my friend Amy, who Jonna knows and loves as well, to a weekend at Mohonk Mountain House.
Oh, nice.
What a nice gift that is, right?
Oh, yeah. And I was so looking forward to it. And we get there and we had a beautiful room on the sixth floor, view of the Catskills, a wood-burning fireplace in the room. And we get unpacked and we decide to just start exploring. I haven't been there in so long. And walk around, check out the spa. We go down to the carriage lounge or something to go have a drink. And who's sitting at the bar but Jeannie Kelly? I
really?
Was shocked. Yes.
Yep.
So that was prearranged, unbeknownst to me. And they say, yeah, we tried for... Now, I had just spent the weekend with Jonna and Jeannie 2 weeks prior.
Right.
They were like, yeah, she says, we tried getting Jonna, but we know you had a 3-week trial, Jonna, and overwhelm and stuff. So, and that was that. So we spent Friday night, Saturday walking around, ice rink, lunch. The food there is amazing. The accommodations were amazing. We were treated so well. And then comes Saturday afternoon. There's a knock at my door. I thought Jeannie's coming over. I look through the peephole and Jeannie's standing 6 feet away from my door. And I turn around to tell Amy, I'm like, Jeannie's standing weird. And Amy's got her camera going. I go, I open the door and who jumps in the frame? But Jonna. So
yeah.
We had a phenomenal dinner of chefs. Tasting,
oh my god,
9 or 10 course meal in the kitchen Saturday
Holy
night.
Cow.
It was phenomenal with wine pairing. What a great time we had.
It was, I mean, what a wonderful gift. So shout out to your husband Craig for putting this together, and Amy helped coordinate. And we knew, Carol, when we went down to North Carolina that this was also happening, which was incredible because I have not had a vacation since January 2010. And in 1 month, I think I took more time off in the month of February of 2026 than I have in my entire career. And it was so worth it and so nice. What a phenomenal gift. And to spend time with such good friends like that is something that I forgot how much I love doing.
Yeah. And then he treated us to massages Sunday morning.
Oh,
and
God, yeah.
Frankenberry, wouldn't you know?
Yeah.
So they had the first and last names of every guest, Amy and Jonna and me and Jeannie, at our place settings. And soon after we sit down, one of the people waiting on us tells Jonna, yeah, I recognize your name from the radio. So I'm like, wait a minute. Which station? What show?
That's right.
And sure enough, it was Happy Hour on K104.
This show right here.
Oh, well, there we go. Holy cow. We've got double-digit listeners now at least.
And fancy, because, you know, this person worked at such a fancy place.
That's a very good point. That's a very good, because obviously if they work at such a fancy place that they have they have a fancy life and only listen to fancy radio.
That's us. We're fancy. We have fancy fans. So it was just an incredible weekend. But I have to end the story with something that Carol doesn't even know.
Oh.
So, okay.
An added surprise. Go ahead.
So because of the way this was set up, Carol and Amy were in one car and me and Jeannie were in another. I was bringing Jeannie home basically after the weekend. Now, Jeannie's sitting in the front now because it's just
us. And wouldn't you know, it's snowing again.
It's just us in the car and
of course
it's snowing. So, and if you haven't been to Mohonk Mountain House, they do put the mountain in house because it is atop a mountain, right? And it's a crazy mountain and beautiful. But when it's snowing and you're with a passenger who's got a borderline full-blown car phobia, I learned that we were really had a treat with Jeannie in the back. Because Jeannie in the front is a whole different Jeannie. Now,
oh, I'm sure.
Frankenberry, she does the things. She grabs the dashboard. She uses her foot
fantastic.
For the brake.
Yep.
She does a lot of this. And nothing, totally unnecessarily. So we finally make it to, I was actually taking her to a meeting spot where her husband was going to take her the rest of the way in Poughkeepsie. And when I finally got her there and I gave Vito a hug and I said to Jeannie, Next time it's me and you in the car, you are sitting in the back. All right. Pretend I'm an Uber driver because we ain't doing this again. And she understood. She knows it's her. She knows it's her and not me.
She was texting the ride home. What she said, Miss Speedy Gonzalez.
Speedy Gonzalez. I'm going like 25 miles an hour and a 30 mile an hour. It's a real phobia.
Yeah, and that's when you're within your rights. You drop her off and say, Jeannie, hey, love you, girlfriend. Get the hell out of my car. Never let me see you again.
No. She's just sitting in the back. Sitting in the back.
Something else I learned about Jeannie is she's nervous staying in a hotel about security issues.
Oh, my God.
So your door, I stayed in her hotel room with her down in North Carolina Saturday night so we can get a super early start Sunday morning to come back. And I walk in and there's a club chair, you know, like a short, not a high back ladder chair, a short club chair, like almost blocking the hall when you first walk in the room. I'm like, is there a reason this is like here? Yes, that's my extra security. So she puts that chair up, not like it's tall enough to jam up under the handle of the door to prevent access,
which would make it effective.
Right. No, this is just a club chair. She goes, well, it'll slow them down. Okay.
It'll just make extra noise while somebody's invading our room to kidnap us.
Oh, we love her.
But wait, okay, just one more thing then, since you brought that up. So now I'm sharing a room with Jeannie at Mohawk Mountain House. And when I get there, she announces to me, the door, there's a balcony, a beautiful balcony that overlooks these beautiful mountains. And she's like, so I confirmed that this door doesn't lock. And I'm like, well, Jeannie, we're on the sixth floor. So only Spider-Man would be able to access. She's like, no. There's an adjacent balcony. The person in that room could come over this railing and get into our room.
Jonna, you just sounded just like her. That's exactly how she would say it.
I've been working on the voice.
Very well done.
So I said, Jeannie, it would take an awful lot of work to murder us that way. And I don't know if there's ever been a murder at Mohonk Mountain House. So let's just take a chance. Well, you know what she did. She wasn't going to buy that, but she didn't want to be embarrassed by putting a chair up against the door. So she took her giant suitcase for a 2-day weekend trip.
Oh, it was giant.
Giant. And she puts that on the suitcase stand. And that just happens to be up against the balcony door. I let it go. I'm like, nah, I don't want to go outside. It's too cold. It's okay, Jeannie. Let's leave it there. So what? We can't open the bathroom door because this giant. It's all right.
So great.
I'm so glad you all had a great time. That's fantastic. Numerous great times. And props to Craig for his fantastic
interview there, Carol. Absolutely, props to Craig. It did not suck.
No. We're trying to think of something nice to do for him. But speaking of not sucking, coming up after this break is Nate Green with our fantabulous discussion about his book, Suck Less.
All right, that sounds good. This is Jonna Spilborn. It is Carol Pesci. It is this Frankenberry fella, and we have more from Happy Hour on the way, so please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again, everyone, to Happy Hour. You've got Jonna Spilborn, you've got Carol Pesci, you've got this fella here, and also you've got our guest here in segment number two. And Jonna, Carol, we are going to be talking to Nate Green, something about sucking less, and I'm all good with that, so I'm interested to hear what he has to say.
Yes, we are all excited today to bring you our guest, Nate Green, who I want to tell you a little bit about because Nate is an award-winning CEO, entrepreneur, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and leadership performance coach, renowned for his relentless spirit and dedication to developing leaders and teams. And wait for this, you guys. His success is reflected in his consistent recognition on the Inc. 5000 list, where he's been from 2021 to 2024, and the successful, not six, not seven, but eight-figure exit of one of his companies.
Nice.
We like eight-figure exits, don't we? But today we're going to talk about Nate's very first book, and I love this title, Suck Less, Do Better. And we're also going to touch on some of his other programs like Built Unstoppable and Focus Your Greatest Asset. Nate Green, you are very good at titling books and I'm sure many other things. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. So Suck Less, Do Better. First of all, before you even tell us how the book came about, because you have a very interesting story. Like you have a very interesting story. I'll let you tell it. How long did it take you to come up with that title? I just got to know.
So the title, to be honest with you, came from a constant statement that I've told myself for the last about 15 years. And to me, it's my daily reminder to chase after constantly bettering myself, shutting out the noise of everything around me and showing up as the better version of myself and competing with how I showed up yesterday. Suck less, do better every day.
It is so incredibly hard. I feel it's hard, and I shouldn't talk to myself that way, to shut out all the noise. And I know that is one of the concepts. I'm about halfway through the book, and that is a major, major theme, like shutting out the rest of it so that you can focus on you. So if you don't mind, can you share with our listeners, like, because you have a very interesting story, something bad happened to you. And was that the inspiration for this book?
Well, so, you know, my life has been one of those journeys that you find yourself to feeling more like a pinata. And rather than, you know, kind of walking through and finding out what are the fun things, it was trying to, you know, overcome one difficulty after another, from paralysis, heart failure, a very tough divorce where child abuse was involved, you know, kind of one constant hurdle after another. And so, you know, for me, it's more a matter of how do you shut out the noise around you? How do you shut out those different difficulties? And then how do you constantly find success despite your circumstances? Exactly. And so for me, it's more a matter of I'm on a mission to provide and help people identify their purpose and really find hope. And a part of it is really just dealing with some of these major holdbacks that so many people encounter.
So the million-dollar question is, like, how do you do that? Some worlds can be very noisy. My world, I think, is very noisy. Not bad noisy. There's just a lot of things on my plate, and a lot of other people feel the same way. And if you're feeling a little bit stuck, and I'm not even going to say that I suck, although I do love the way you refer to suck as a noun instead of a verb, right? You're like, let's define your suck. So it can be different things for different people. But is that step one, is before you can break through the noise, you have to define your suck?
Well, so defining your suck really comes just in your entire journey. But shutting out the noise really comes down to identifying who you are and what you are built for, and then hyper-focusing on that. Because in your journey, if you're so busy worried about what other people are doing, how they're succeeding, how other people are showing up in their lives, what are the results of their actions, then how can you really keep focused on you? Because if you're comparing yourself to John, well, listen, I'm not John. I'm never going to show up like John. I'm going to show up like Nate. So first, it's really identifying who you are, how you are built to achieve success, and setting your lighthouse, which is your goals. After that, then everybody else's goals doesn't matter anymore. What they do has no bearing on your life and where you're going. It really comes down to only you and your future and the development that you're on.
You have an example, though, in your book, which when I was listening to it in the car, and I like grabbed the steering wheel with both hands going, how the hell did you do this? Where you talk about, and correct me if I get any of these facts wrong, where you were kind of like in a bad spot financially. You had these responsibilities. You were married. You had kids you had to support. You weren't making what you wanted to be making. And you got an opportunity to take a job that would have solved all those problems, like a six-figure salary. And you thought on it and you were like, yeah, nope. Can you talk to us a little bit about
that?
Yes, that was a very, very tough moment in my life, because I was faced with what appeared to be the answer to all my problems, the solution to all the pain, during this season where I was on the brinks of losing my house, which, to be honest with you, I did. I ended up having to short sell that house because of how hard that first year of launching, starting, and building a business was. My first year, my first step into entrepreneurship. And this one one opportunity was going to literally solve all that problems and give me the opportunity to get back made whole financially. But instead, I had to stay true to who I really was, the passions, the focus, all this dedication, because if I took the easy road, then that easy road would have left me constantly wanting something else. I would have been unsettled and I would have never been satisfied with that journey. And so it was just a matter of time before I had to go back into the painstaking process. There is no shortcut through the process to find what you're really built for. You just have to sit in it, grind through it, and really develop yourself within it.
So I have a stupid question, and whoever listened to our past shows, you're going to know that I have a lot of stupid questions. And here's one for you. So, okay, so using that as an example, right? Like you could have taken this job that would have solved your financial problems and a lot of the problems that go along with the financial difficulty. But you said, I had to stay true to me. And a lot of people, so I guess my question is, how did you know what you were staying true to? And I ask that because a lot of people might say, well, my dream is to be an actor, and I'm going to stay true to that. I'm only going to do things that help me be an actor. But when you're sitting there on the balls of your butt and you can't make ends meet, you might say to yourself, well, you know what? Telemarketing is more for me. I'm going to do that. So how do you tell yourself that you know what you know what you know when you are struggling so much trying to get there?
See, that's where there's a major issue that I find across our entire nation as a whole. And that's really where that's one of the problems that I strive to fix, is really working on that process. And I go into that in chapter five a little bit. It's called Hyper Focus on You. But in practicum, it's really understanding that core of who you are, and better yet, understanding the display of what you could become given your skill sets, your abilities, and your capabilities, setting that trajectory of what is the greater version of you that could actually exist. And so in my life, that was actually when I was a cop. I was a little unsettled during that journey, knowing that I was really built for more. And so I started doing career tests, cognitive tests, personality tests, you name it, to really try to understand me. And through that, and through uncovering really what I could become, that really helped me set this precedence of the direction I needed to travel in, where I needed to go. That's when I started going to school for business. I started working through this process still while I was a cop. Why? Because it was like there's this development of who Nate Green was able to become. And I started to have to move down that path. And then that became that bar of comparison that you start looking at everything through and weigh it against.
It can be so hard, right, for people to stick to it. And one of the things, and I actually am up to your Hyper Focus on You chapter in the book. And I think it's really hard for people to stick to it when you are struggling. You managed to do it, but how do you help people? How do you help people get past that hurdle and stay the course even when it's such a struggle?
Well, in every area of our life, whether it's physical fitness, whether it's religion, whether it is business or any areas, relationships, it's very important to have accountability in place. And so different people, whether you're intrinsically motivated or extrinsically motivated, you need to have some form of accountability. I've always been a little bit relentless in my self-accountability, and I don't think anybody could ever push me to the extremes that I push myself. But for those that are more externally focused or extrinsically focused, having the right accountability with the right leaders around you, and that's why we have the programs we have, is to help people really get that roadmap built. And then we have coaching that can help them stay on track. And so that's the biggest thing, is like when you have your doubts, if you let yourself stay in your own headspace, then you're just going to look at what your greatest fear is, like whack-a-mole. You're like dealing with all these feelings rather than facts. And that's where I like to work on focus over feelings, where I set trajectories of where I'm going and I focus on that. And the days that you wake up and you're like, you know what, I'm going to fail. You worry about all these different pieces. You see all the distractions, all the noise. Then those are the days you don't make decisions. You literally say, Nate, no decisions today. You're just going to focus on one step in front of you. You're just going to move the needle just a little bit in one way. You're going to show up consistently today And that's really where you got to watch out. I mean, we all have those days. It doesn't matter how much success you have, how great you become. You're going to have those days. You look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, well, crap, I don't think I'm good enough today.
Yeah. And the hope is that you don't have too many of those days strung in a row. But you actually just reminded me of something. So two things. And I want to talk to you about the benefits of coaching in a second, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around whether I should get a coach. But set that aside for a minute. You mentioned sometimes you have to utilize facts over feeling. But I want to ask you this, because a lot of the decisions I make in life, I tend to make more on feeling, and they haven't been bad. Some of them maybe have. Like, for example, right now I'm struggling. So I'm selling a building. This is actually a true story. I'm selling a building and I have a realtor. And the realtor came to me the other day and said, you know, I have somebody who wants to make an offer. It's a little less than what you want to sell it for, but I want to talk to you about doing that. And I immediately said to him, I'm glad you called, because not only am I not going to sell it for less, but I actually want to talk to you about increasing the list price. And I have no, listen, there's no reason for me to do it except my gut is telling me to do it. And maybe I'm never going to sell the building now. But so we can't always discount our feelings over facts, right?
Sometimes. I mean, the fastest way to get yourself in the biggest amount of trouble is with feelings. I mean, think about all the marriages that have fallen apart. Either A, it was getting into the marriage that was based upon feelings, or it was the choice to get out. And there's all these statistics on how many people regret getting out of the marriage because they were focused so much on feelings. They felt like getting out. They felt like they weren't going to be able to work together. They felt. Same thing with business. Same thing with so many different things. You're talking about feelings. And so you even go back, let's just even talk about business principles. I'm sorry, biblical principles. Let's talk about King David. Look at what his feelings led him to do. And so when you're talking about that side in every different area, you look at some of the biggest mistakes that have happened is based upon feelings. And so that's really where you have to have your bar of facts, your bar of, hey, listen, like this might be a great feeling, but how does it pertain to really the direction I'm going in for who I am, the goals that I'm setting in place? And in like your case, that's great. It's great that you might want to raise the price, but what facts substantiate that feelings? Because it's your risk. You can hold on to it, but there's obviously a reason why you had the feeling that you wanted to sell at one point. And so is it that you want to sell or you don't want to sell? Because I think your feelings might be a little contradictory, and it might be that you might say, hey, listen, I'm willing to sell if the juice is worth the squeeze, meaning like if the price is worth it, then I'll sell. If not, I'd rather keep it. And that's great. Those are great feelings. And so each situation, you have to have bearings. But just because you had a feeling that you wanted to raise the price, I don't think it's made because you have knowledge that the building is worth that amount. It's just more a matter of like you would probably rather keep it if it doesn't sell for a certain price. And that's okay.
So back up your feelings with some facts. But I do want to talk to you about something that I really wasn't intending to speak about, but has been on my mind. You're a coach and you're a successful coach. And we've had several guests on the show who are coaches. We have friends who are coaches. We have a lot of coaches in our lives. I have never once in a single time utilized a coach. And I know a lot of people who do, and they get a tremendous benefit out of it. And I can talk about feelings. I can't figure out why I haven't pulled the trigger and hired a coach. So what would you say to somebody who's interested in hiring a coach? Like, who needs a coach?
I think, in my opinion, everybody needs a coach. It's just more a matter of what type of coach you need. And knowing you and your background in the legal arena, you're a very facts-based person. And so sometimes with coaches, the coach that people like me and you, because I'm a very black and white type person, we don't so much need somebody that is going to get us out of bed in the morning and keep us in our routine, because we're going to stay in our routine because that's what we like. Yeah. We're comfortable inside structure. But maybe the coach that we need is the person that's going to help us break through the limiting lenses that we have, break through some of the mindsets that are holding us back. See, everybody needs a coach. It just depends on what type of coach you need. And that's really where, you know, for me, it's important to have a coach, somebody that pushes you in certain areas or helps pull you out of comfort. And so that's really where I'm sure within a half hour call between me and you, I can identify exactly where you need the coach and why you need that. And then I could help you identify the exact type of coach that's going to be the one that's going to get you across the finish line.
Nate, this is Carol. I have a question for you on that yeah. train of thought. You speak so well. You're very intelligent. I felt like Jonna owes you a nickel, like the peanuts the doctor's in, like you just gave her a little mini session there. Yeah. Highly successful. Somebody's listening right now and they're feeling like they're not reaching their potential. No idea what's holding them back. Not right. clear on what that they want to do. Right. Give me a picture of somebody who would work really well with you that would align with what you're able to help them do. How do they know they need you?
Yeah, one of the things that has really broken me out of the mold from other coaches is found in chapter two. The lens, your lens is broken. I deal with a lot and I talk a lot about cracked lenses everywhere from childhood to past relationships. These things, it's called cognitive biases. That's a technical term. We all run through life with these cognitive biases that hold us back in every different way because they create what's called automaticities, like automatic responses. And so when you're talking about that, each one of our lives is filled full of all of these crazy default patterns, default reactions. And so each one of us sit at this point in our lives and we realize it doesn't matter how much success that you've achieved or the lack of success, there's a reason why you're there. And so each person, in my opinion, really should have a coach to really help them identify that one piece. And that's really where for us, our team, we dive hard into why. I call it the inner two-year-old. Why are you here?
Yeah.
Why are you feeling this way? Why? First, we start tearing people apart from that perspective to go all the way back to childhood to see why they've created this normalization of their habits, of their process. And once you figure that out, then man, the entire world becomes so much more open because you get to reframe the past in this new lens now as an adult. And then you get to start setting the parameters of the lighthouse that you really want to chase, releasing these things from the past. And that's where accountability, right mindsets, walking through, and there's so many foundations. So when people find themselves stuck, that's really where that's our passion is. You're stuck at this level, you know, and you're stuck right in this moment. And you're stuck in whatever this career, whatever this is, versus breaking out into the freedoms in which you're able to live in.
And that is probably the majority of people listening right now. And things happen to us when we're very young. And we always think, oh, we don't have to go back and dig that out. But they imprint on us. And we then form beliefs around those things that happen to us, particularly if they're highly emotionally charged. And then we adapt or we find a way to protect ourselves or keep ourselves safe in response to that, which was brilliant and perfect at 2 years old, 4 years old, 6 years old. But then the fact of the matter is we grow up and below the surface, those things are still with the best of intention driving our behavior, but they're holding us back. 100%. Tell me that. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. And think about this. Our parents had cracked lenses, which right. then create our cracked lenses. And an example that in my life, my parents were incredible. So I never want anybody to think that my parents were bad. My parents were incredible. But my dad pushed hard into, Nate, you need to get a job with a pension or a retirement system. And yeah. so when I told him I was starting my business back in 2008, you know, he told me, Nate, I think you should just go find a job with a pension and a retirement.
Well, yeah.
And if I had listened to that, my entire future would have looked completely different. What I've gone through would look different. The success I've had would look different. I'd be running a job that had pension retirement. Instead, I created pension retirements for other people. I created a process. I've created a business. I created wealth. And so in there, that one thing is just an easy example of how we could very systematically create these tiny adaptations in our future by listening to a constant statement that was pushed in my head from the time that I was around 14 years old all the way through to when I launched my first business.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't have had an eight-figure exit. had to listen to your old dad.
Nor pension.
I totally
no, not at all. That different world at that point.
I totally get, you know, but he wanted you to play it safe because that's what his lens, you know, probably yep. looked like. And what you said really resonated with me just a second ago, how you help people figure out why they need a coach and what area they need a coach. And I think that's where I've been stuck and holding back. And like I said, I have friends who are really good coaches and I've just never gone there. It's like, nah, I'll just stay right here. But this is actually very, very inspiring. Can you tell us, we do have to wrap up here, but what can you tell us a little bit about your programs that I know on your website, you have one called Built Unstoppable and Focus Your Greatest Asset. Tell us about them.
So Built Unstoppable is one of my favorite projects that we've ever worked on, because this is the culmination of helping people work on three core pillars: the core of who they are, what they're built for, the fuel that is driving them, and then the lighthouse that they're chasing after, and then putting all that into practicum. That's all the first half of the program. The second half of the program, we dial into all their holdbacks, crack lenses, all the noise that distracts them, what is derailing the progress, and then dialing into the focused action that they need to take to overcome them and find success in their life. That is probably one of my favorite things that we've ever done. And I'm super excited about that because it is incredible. Like, people like you that are in this point, yes, you can do one-on-one coaching from the start, but a lot of times if you jump into the mastermind like that, then that's going to give you such a vast momentum building process that when you come out, then you're going to be more equipped to really know where your holdbacks are. So then that way, when you do get into one-on-one coaching, you are very precise with what you're chasing after.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because that's the other thing. People like me, like, if I do get into a coaching program, I want to be fixed like really instantly, like 5 minutes.
100%. Yep. Yeah. You want momentum. And unfortunately, a lot of times there's a lot of coaches that they're what's considered performance coaches, and that's all they do. And what they do is they say, hey, listen, I'm going to inspire you. But what's the saying? You inspire an idiot. Now you just have an inspired idiot. Like, what good is that? I can get on a half hour call with you and I can get you hyped up. You're going to go run through a wall and you're going to go do it well. But the problem is you're going to be stuck in the same rut tomorrow. Versus what we do is we help you fix the core fundamental principles that drive you in the wrong direction or hold you back from chasing after the life that you are able to and called to live.
And you literally walk the walk and talk the talk. So you're the real deal. I wish we didn't have to wrap up, but we do need to wrap up with, we've been speaking with Nate Green, who is an award-winning CEO, entrepreneur, best-selling author of Suck Less, Do Better. Like, how can you not pick that book up? Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, and your coaching programs. And I know that if people want to connect with you, Nate, your main website successwithnategreen.com?
That is correct.
And they can learn all about your programs there and also follow you on Instagram. I think your Instagram is I am Nate Green. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, cool. Because that's where I start my stalking, mostly is on Instagram.
I like it. Super stalker style.
I didn't have to look at my sheet for that. I memorized it. That's how good a stalker I am. So Success with Nate Green. We've been speaking with author, CEO, all around fabulous guy, Nate Green. Pick up the book, Suck Less, Do Better. Nate, can we have you back like a bunch more times?
Let's do it. I'm all for it. This is great. We could talk for days. We can do live coaching sessions for all I care. Let's go.
Wow, awesome. Customer number one. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you very much, Nate. And I know you mentioned earlier that obviously, you feel that John is a big fan of the facts, but also know that she does like her flights of fancy. She's a big fan of Hallmark films. So just keep that in mind, future reference, if you do end up coaching her. Rom-com. She's all about rom-coms. So anyway, we've got segment number three still to come with John Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and some fella, and we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here. It's Jonna Spilborg. It's Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
Well, it is nice to be back and talking to you two again. And obviously, you all had some great adventures, which we talked about there in segment number one. And Nate, it was nice to revisit Nate. Some learning we did again with the Nate.
We did. You know, look, I always love taking advice from people who have not just talked the talk, but walked. Right. Right.
And who can be funny about it. Like, right. Even just the title of his book is clever.
Which, you know, we've talked about that before, too. I think you can sell books based on the title alone.
Done it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know you have. And a good title really is half the battle. I mean, of course.
That's how you found him to begin with. You were like, oh, I love this title. Who is this guy?
Yep. Yep. You know, and your books too. Your books have some, Happy Bitch.
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about that when we were on our trip, by the way, how we met. And that was, and I love revisiting that story. But anyway, Nate is he's a special guy and he knows how to get it done. And I highly recommend the book. And there's all that.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it was nice to catch back up with him. So for anybody else out there, if you're just tuning in now for some reason, well, hello.
Where you been?
Yeah, can you set your alarm, please? All right, people. But anyway, it was, revisiting Nate Green there. Thanks to him for rejoining us. And as I always say when we revisit guests, even though he doesn't know. Thanks, Nate. And for Jonas Spillboard, for Carol Pesci, I am this Frankenberry fella, and this is Happy Hour, and we'll be back again next week, same time, right here.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spillboard and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.